Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast. We are obviously in some crazy times right now. For me personally, not the best of times. You know, it's fucked up out there right now. And my kids are home from school. I am kind of, I'm done working. I'm into full survival mode, trying to educate my kids, trying to order food online. I'm having trouble doing that, have it delivered. You know, it's really some strange times here in New Jersey of the United States of America and throughout the world. So I just wanted to mention that I'm not oblivious to it. I get it. We're all in the same boat. It's completely nuts. All right. So let's do what we can to band together and get through this. And hopefully it'll be sooner than later. And I am confident that it will all return to normal. It's never going to be normal again. There's going to be a new normal. But I tell you, when The Rock returns, when the tours return, it's going to be great. It's going to be even better because we are going to have missed it for a short amount of time, maybe a long amount of time. I don't know. So moving forward, I'm going to do as many Talking Metal podcasts as I can. That might mean it's more than normal. It might mean it's 2 a week since I'm home, but it might mean it's less than normal. It might mean it's once every 2 weeks because honestly, I am balancing a lot of stuff, as I know you all are, even though I can't leave my house. Mostly a dog and two crazy kids. And, you know, Emily works from home, so she's thankfully for us still working, or else we'd be really in trouble. So that's kind of where I'm at. And I just wanted to say, moving forward, I'm not going to talk about COVID-19. I'm not going to talk about the fact that things are whacked out right now. I'm going to try to give you a podcast that is something that takes your mind off of all this. I will continue to talk about things in the real world on my YouTube channel, on the Mark Striegel podcast, which a lot of you patrons get. But here on Talking Metal, we're going to keep things unreal. We're going to keep things in the fantasy world. And we go there a lot in this episode today. So I'm not going to mention any of this stuff for at least the next, let's say, 3 episodes. I'm just going to provide you with a normal Talking Metal podcast. And that's that. It's a little escape from reality. We have two friends on today's show. We got my friend John Wiederhorn, who has written some amazing books. We're going to talk to him about his books. And we have a guy, I guess I'd call him a new friend. His name is Milton. He's a mysterious dude. He plays with a band called Jazz Sabbath, not to be confused with Black Sabbath. And I don't know what to make of this guy. Let me know what you guys think. He is definitely a weird character for weird times, right? So let's check it out. Jazz Sabbath. And it's a good listen, man. Now, if you haven't heard the Jazz Sabbath album yet that's about to drop, it is great. I got an advanced copy, and I really am really enjoying it. So again, Milton from Jazz Sabbath will be joining us in just a bit. Here we go. Let's get into this episode of the Talking Metal Podcast.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal,
and anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra with Which Way to Radioland.
Sean Baker Orchestra here on the Talking Metal Podcast. That again is Sean Baker, as in Baker's Dozen, you know, Baker Orchestra. And that song, which you can listen to just about anywhere, is Which Way to Radioland. Support Sean Baker. He rocks. Sean, hope you're doing well out there. And without further ado, this guy is, he's out there, man. He's out there. His name is Milton Keynes. From the jazz trio, Jazz Sabbath, and he's got quite a story to tell. And I'll let you be the verdict on his story. There's some people who think he's a fraud. There's some people who think he's a genius. And there's some people who think, you know, he may have invented heavy metal, but he did it in the jazz world. So who knows what the real story is? But let's get right into this interview right now with Milton Keynes from Jazz Sabbath. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and on the line with me, we have a lost legend, if you will, calling in from the band Jazz Sabbath, the one, the only Milton Keynes. Milton, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm good, man. Mark, thanks for having me.
You bet. I wanted to learn a little bit about you because I've read some stuff in the press about Jazz Sabbath, and it was about 50 years ago that Jazz Sabbath, your band, was set to release the debut album, but I guess at that point there was a health issue that you had, and the album was, I guess, shelved. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened, Mark. I I mean, back in the day, I was kind of caning things quite hard, as a lot of the musicians, the jazz musicians, did in the time. I didn't live life. I attacked it, really. You know, so I was drinking 6 or 7 bottles of Pepto-Bismol a day at one point. You know, my stomach ulcers were just in a mess. But that led to a heart attack. And, of course, while I was in hospital, the record company didn't know if I was going to survive. So they shelved the album. And, you know, that was the start of a pretty bad run of luck for me.
And at some point, they must have realized, though, that you were going to survive, but they still just weren't interested in releasing the album at that point.
Well, the problem was that the record company offices burned down, and the fire destroyed all the tapes, and the record company then went bust. It was all, as I say, it was like a catalog of disasters. Wow. I mean, I'm going to use this opportunity if I can, Mark. If you don't mind, the owner of the record company was jailed for insurance fraud, but I don't believe that was the case. I do think that other band were responsible for an arson attack, which cost me my livelihood. And that's me saying this.
Wow. So you're saying that the story was he burnt the warehouse down on purpose, but you personally believe that there was another band that may have burned the warehouse down specifically because the master tapes for Jazz Sabbath were in the warehouse?
Well, I'm not going to say yes, but yes.
Right. Okay.
Well, I did say yes. Yeah. That's what I believe. I mean, my lawyer has advised me otherwise, but, you know, the truth's got to come out, Mark. I can't live this lie, you know, 50 years later. This album needs to be heard.
Absolutely. And we're talking to Milton from the jazz trio Jazz Sabbath. And I'm assuming, knowing what I've heard about Black Sabbath, maybe possibly stealing some of the ideas for their songs from your songs, I'm assuming you are saying that maybe members of Black Sabbath actually burnt the warehouse down?
Well, I mean, that's the only logical explanation that I can think of, or maybe somebody in their management team or organization or somebody was instructed to do it, because it just seems a bit too coincidental, you know.
Right on. Wow. So anyways, 50 years later, 2019, it's discovered that the master tapes were actually not destroyed in the fire that may or may not have been set by Black Sabbath or their people. What do you remember about learning about that the master tapes were still intact? And why did it take so long for these tapes to be found?
Well, there was a basement in the record company offices, which it turns out was sealed and wasn't destroyed in the fire. So the owner, the new owner that bought the derelict buildings in 2019, he was converting it into a vegan pet shop, I believe, and discovered a collection of things down in this basement, this lost basement, and including my tapes. So that's how I was reunited, and the time is now. You know?
Right on. And the time is now. Again, the Jazz Sabbath record is set to finally see a release. Is it out yet, Milton? When does it actually hit the streaming services and the stores?
And it should be, I think it's the 27th of March. It comes out. And this is the lost album from 1969 that was, we've had to tidy a few things up, and I've called in a few favors from some friends of mine to come and, to help tidy things up.
Right on. I hear you. And the songs on the Jazz Sabbath album are songs that most of us know as Black Sabbath songs. Now, you claim that Sabbath took these songs from you, stole the songs from you. How did this happen if the album was actually never released? Do you remember them like showing up at your shows, or how did they actually know the songs?
Well, they were always there. I mean, I remember seeing Geezer Butler at quite a few shows, certainly down in Willesden at the Pig and Two Flutes. He would come down from Birmingham, and he would sit there with a Cinzano and Lemonade and a notepad. I always thought that was weird. I just thought he was maybe working on some other stuff. But, you know, it's pretty clear now that he was pretty much transcribing our whole set and getting together with Tony Iommi, and the rest is unfortunately history. You know, it's just one tragedy after another.
Right on, right on. And there's a great video online where you talk about some of the song names and how you came up with them and stuff, which we will actually link through today's show notes on talkingrock.net and talkingmetal.com. So definitely go check that out, guys. But once again, we're talking with Milton from Jazz Sabbath. And, you know, you mentioned Tony, you mentioned Geezer. Have you ever met, you know, Ozzy or Tony or Geezer?
Well, listen, I've been trying to contact them for 50 odd years. Some would say stalked them, but I'm just trying to get the truth told. I've written to them probably every 10 days
for 50 years.
Pretty much.
Wow.
You know, that takes time as well. You know, it's writing letters is it's like writing music, man. It's kind of a lost art. So. I mean, I'm just hoping one day they might actually get in touch and, you know, just an apology really is what I want.
You're not looking for money or anything like that?
Well, yeah, I'm looking for money as well, but, you can start with an apology and then we'll, right. Take it from there.
Right on. So Jazz Sabbath was, I guess was a trio, right? Are the two other guys still around? Whatever happened to those two other guys?
Well, yeah, I mean, the other guys, I don't really know, to be honest. I mean, God, it's been so long. Jack, I don't know. He must be in his hundreds now, so I haven't really been in touch with him much. He's getting on a bit. We did try a singer once, but to try and kind of, you know, give it a bit more of a commercial vibe. But to be honest, we ditched him because he just sang over all my piano parts. And one take as well, the drummer, I mean, I think he's still alive. He lives in Mexico somewhere, but yeah, haven't heard from him for a bit.
Right. So if you go out and do any live performances of this at this point, those two guys will obviously no longer be involved.
Well, I can't say that for sure. I mean, I'd have to try and reach out and see if they'd be interested. But it's a good idea, to be honest. I hadn't really thought much about that.
Right on, right on. Rick Wakeman is, I guess, known obviously best for the band Yes, working with Yes and being in Yes. He also did work with Bowie and Sabbath and a long list of, you know, really big name artists. And when I say Sabbath, I mean Black Sabbath, not Jazz Sabbath. There's rumors, though, he may have actually jammed with Jazz Sabbath or maybe even did some recording with Jazz Sabbath back in the day. Are these rumors true? And what was Rick like if you do know Rick?
Well, to be honest, we just needed somebody to come in. We were working on a second album at the same time, as the first, debut album. And, we wanted to get somebody in that, you know, had a bit of a name in the jazz world. And, well, he didn't really have a very good name, but he was right. Cheap, so we got him in. And unfortunately, we had a bit of a setback when we had a bit of an issue with providing some food for him, and he stormed out of the studio. So we didn't actually get him to play on anything at all. It was a bit of a sad moment for me because I thought it could sort of take us to that next sort of level, really. But anyway, he buggered off, and that was that. So.
Wow. Are you aware that his son, Adam Wakeman, actually has played with Black Sabbath and is in Ozzy's band? Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not aware of, what was his name?
Adam Wakeman.
No, not
never,
familiar
never
with
heard
him.
Of him.
I don't listen to a lot of music, to be honest.
Oh, okay. All right. And Milton, I mean, no offense, but this is all kind of coming out of nowhere. And like, I've never heard of Jazz Sabbath. I've never heard of you. And what actually have you been up to these past 50 years?
Aside from writing letters every 7 to 10
right.
days,
right.
I've been doing a little bit of work as a gardener for quite some time. I still used to play a little bit just to keep my hand in. I used to play at a restaurant called Pizza Piazza in a town called Marlow, in West out of London.
And okay.
He used to play there with a guitar player called Chester Draws, who guests actually on the album. So it's, I mean, just a few gigs here and there, but to be honest, I've been trying to get this story told for 50 years, and I'm so grateful, for journalists like yourselves to get involved and try and tell the truth, tell the true story.
Right on, right on. Well, it's at times it seems like a sad and tragic story here, but we're glad that the album is finally going to see the light of day. Again, Jazz Sabbath. We're talking with Milton Keynes, the pianist of the trio known as Jazz Sabbath. Are you guys or you, Milton, on social media? Do you do like Facebook and Instagram and that type of stuff?
There's some minions in the office that do all that kind of thing. To be honest, I don't have a computer or a phone, so it's kind of down to the other people at the record company. But jazzsabbath.net apparently is where you can find stuff. So that's the place to go.
Cool. And as we mentioned, the songs on the record are songs that most of us know as Black Sabbath songs. Could you run down some of the titles for us? What songs are actually on there?
Well, it's obviously Rat Salad and Fairies Wear Boots, Iron Man, another kind of classic of ours that was stolen. Children of the Grave is obviously a big one, Changes, which we changed the title to that one quite a few times, so but it did end up as Changes on the record.
So there's, okay, right. So there's a meaning behind that, huh?
There is. I sort of talk in quite in-depthly in the documentary. I don't know if you've seen that with
yes.
Robert Powell is. Again, helping to bring the truth to the masses, and we discussed some of the titles on the film, which is good.
Awesome. Well, it's been an honor talking with you, Milton, and the best of luck with Jazz Sabbath finally seeing the light of day. Over 50 years since you guys originally recorded it and wanted it to be released. So I'm glad for you that this is finally coming out, and best of luck to you, Milton.
Brilliant. Thanks, Mark. Thank you.
yeah, a little Jazz Sabbath right there on Talking Metal. The debut album, missing for 50 years, has been found, and it's going to be out shortly, guys. Check it out on all your streaming services. And yeah, Jazz Sabbath, finally seeing the light of day after 50 years. Big thanks to Milton for joining me. And right now, you know, I want to get into some Ozzy Osbourne. This is a song called Hand of the Enemy, written by Ozzy Osbourne, Kevin Churko, and Adam Wakeman. This is going back already 10 years ago off the Scream record. Ozzy, of course, has a new record out, which I've spoken about, and I dig the new record, Ordinary Man. But this, again, is another album that I dig by Ozzy, Scream. And this was actually one of the like bonus tracks. I think it wasn't on the original release of Scream. It was on the like tour edition or something like that. I guess maybe it was a leftover track or something. But anyways, it's called Hand of the Enemy.
Friends close, but your enemies closer, closer. I'm another breed. Watch out, watch me. I'm your new best friend. I am what you want me to be. Why can't you take what you give to me?
Talking Metal, and I want to get into my interview with John Wiederhorn, who is a great author and a good friend of mine from Montclair, New Jersey, formerly I think of Brooklyn, New Jersey. But first, let's get into Shattered by Savy.
it, so I put you on your knees. I'll be there when your conscience grows. I'll be there when the curtain falls. You know that.
Some brand new Sabi here on Talking Metal. Some great rock and hard rock metal out of Bulgaria. And that one goes out to my good friend Steven Saylor, who requested that. Steven is one of our patrons on Patreon. I encourage you to join us on Patreon. It's a good hang on Patreon. And you support Talking Metal. You support what I'm doing by joining us on Patreon. And a big shout out to Steven Rodriguez, who also just joined us on Patreon. Glad to have you join the party of the patrons on Patreon, Steve Rodriguez. I appreciate that. Did I say Steven Rodriguez? It's Steven Saylor, Steve Rodriguez, I believe. And Steve, I'm going to play a song for you in a minute. But before I do that, I did want to mention John Wiederhorn, an interview with John Wiederhorn coming up shortly here on Talking Metal. But right now, let's get into a song by Odometer? Odometer? I think Odometer, right, Steve? I think that's how it's pronounced. Odometer. And this song is called Time to Shine. And I'm sending this out to Steven. No, not Steven. Steve Rodriguez, who has now joined us on Patreon. We'll be right back. Rodriguez. That one is for you. Time to Shine by Odometer here on Talking Metal. Thank you for joining us. And without further ado, we're going to get into my interview with my friend John Wiederhorn, a guy who I've hung out with many times, I've jammed with, I've drank many a beers with. He's a great guy, and he has some excellent books. So let's talk with my friend John Wiederhorn right now here on Talking Metal. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal podcast and calling in once again. I know we've had him on the show at least two or three times before. John Wiederhorn. John, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing good under the circumstances. We obviously have a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world right now, and people are kind of hunkering down, staying home, and what better time than now to read a book, because that's what I'm doing. I got a couple books going, and I got to tell you, your new book, Raising Hell, is one of them, and wow, it's great. Some really great stories in this book. It is, again, Raising Hell, Backstage Tales from the Lives of Metal Legends, and there is some juicy stuff in this book, some fun stuff. Let's talk a little bit about where this idea for the book came from, John.
Sure thing. About 7 years ago, I did a book that was an oral history of metal called Louder Than Hell.
I read that one, too.
Oral history of metal. Yeah, and that was a great foot-in-the-door kind of situation, and it outlined metal and the history of the genre from the 60s to the present day. But my favorite parts of it weren't the parts that explained how metal has evolved or what albums were important. It was really what was going on behind the scenes and how the cultures of the different genres or subgenres were kind of colorful and displayed the lifestyle at the times and how they differed from one another. There were a lot of great I guess sex, drugs, and rock and roll stories, for lack of a better explanation.
Right.
But I thought, wow, everybody loves that stuff. And for me, if that stuff has a really good story or a twist ending or great details, then that's what I find really enjoyable. So I thought, it'd be really cool to get a book together that just had a bunch of great stories, kind of the stuff that bandmates talk about when they're together and not working on music and just having a couple beers and laughs, and put that all together in these different chapters that are each separated to focus on one aspect each of the metal lifestyle, whether it's crazy things that happen on the road or the dangers of touring, or mishaps on stage, down to the basic alcohol stories, strange experiences with the occult or paranormal, and then everything's divided up. So the groupies chapter is called Girls, 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 which is of course a Motley Crue song, and everything is named after a song or some aspect of metal. There's one chapter named after an album, and one is called That Was Spinal Tap, and that's kind of self-explanatory, but it was one of my favorite chapters, because I've always asked artists, tell me your best Spinal Tap story.
Yeah.
And when they don't say, oh, we got lost under a stage once, which is kind of a snooze, sometimes they come up with some really really funny and odd anecdotes that very well could have been in the movie.
Right, absolutely. And again, the amount of people you have in this book is staggering. I mean, and we're talking big name artists, bands like Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax, Pantera, but also like lesser known artists too. And how did you determine whose stories made the cut? It was just the best stories win? Because I mean, there's some, I have to admit, there's a few names in the book. When I was reading, I was like, who is this person? Like Primitive Man, I remember, like they're in the book, and I had to kind of remind myself about who they were. But their story was great, so it was still very entertaining to read, even though I didn't actually know who they were.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was part of my goal. I've been interviewing artists for so long that I've gotten a pretty good handle on which have great stories and which give good interviews. As much as I love Iron Maiden, there was really no need to go to any of the members and ask them if they would contribute to the book, because they generally don't tell outrageous tales. I'm sure they have funny stories to tell. I'm not doubting that, but they're polite English gentlemen who, you know, really don't spill the tea, I guess, as the kids say these days. So I kind of cherry picked who I wanted to talk to. And for instance, I knew that John Gallagher from Raven had always is a great interview and has amazing stories to tell and has been doing this for so long. And while the average metalhead might not know Raven, they were a significant group from the new wave of British heavy metal scene. And, you know, they did some great songs and are worth knowing. Kind of on a same direction, there's a fellow named King Fowley from a band called Deceased. And Deceased are lesser known. You know, they were on Relapse Records, and I think they're on Hell's Headbangers now. So, you know, they're much more obscure, but the guy is just a treasure trove of wild stories and has absolutely lived the hard life of metal excess and especially debauchery, and
right.
holds no punches when it comes to telling really grisly and harrowing and hilarious stories in great detail. So I knew who could tell a great story before I went in and asked them if they'd contribute to the book. And the ground rules were pretty much that, look, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus. You know, this is just a fun book which reveals a little bit about metal culture and has a lot of great stories, be they really, really funny or kind of chilling. But, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be screaming for their lawyers, at least I hope not.
Right,
think, you know, there's nothing that's revealed that's I think defaming or embarrassing in any way.
Right on. And you got Gary Holt to write the intro. That's pretty cool. Exodus Slayer guitarist Gary Holt. How did that come about?
Oh, it was great. I've known Gary for a while, and he's another one of those characters who just always gives great interviews and doesn't hold back when it comes to what he's experienced in life with Slayer and Exodus and certainly the San Francisco Bay Area thrash scene. So, you know, he was running around with Paul Bailoff, the members of Metallica, and even guys from Death Angel when they were really young, and they were just wreaking havoc at house parties in San Francisco, and he's talked about them. He told me a lot of the stuff when I did Louder Than Hell. He gave me some great details about some great stories. So I knew, you know, aside from other interviews I'd done with him, I knew that he just had these great anecdotes. And since he's specialized in destruction and mayhem with a wry sense of humor over the years, I thought he'd be really good to get in touch with and see if he was interested in doing the intro for the book. And he was, which was, I was thrilled about.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of your other books I just want to touch upon, because you mentioned Louder Than Hell, the definitive oral history of heavy metal. Great read. I really enjoyed that. I read that a while ago at this point. the Anthrax, the Scott Ian one, I'm the Man.
I'm
right?
The Man.
Yeah, the story of that guy from Anthrax. That was another great one. And in that book, there's a story that I always think of where Al Jorgensen from Ministry keeps showing up at their gigs. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that inspired me then to eventually read the book that you wrote with Al Jorgensen, which I have to admit, I know it's been out a while, but I only recently read it. Ministry, The Lost Gospels According to Al Jorgensen. And man, what an insane story and book that is. I know we're here to talk about the new book, Raising Hell, but I do have to give big shout out and props to that book, because it's so over the top that I have to admit to you, there's times when I'm reading it, it's like, is this actually what happened, or is this just the way Al remembers it. I mean, did you get that at all when he relayed these stories to you? I mean, because there's some that are just so out there.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I called it the Lost Gospels, according to Al Jurgensen.
Right, okay.
And throughout
okay.
the book, I have interviews with his dad, other band members that he'd been with, people who he'd tour with, and they all told their own stories, some of which slightly contradicted what Al said. And I'm not implying that these are all fabrications, but through much of the time period that we're discussing here, you know, he was in the throes of heroin addiction. And I think for a lot of addicts who are really caught up in the addiction, the day-to-day kind of falls by the wayside. So 30 years later, especially, I mean, I kept trouble remembering what I ate for breakfast a week ago, so although it was probably cereal. But, you know, for someone who's had a serious drug addiction, it's hard to remember what happened in the studio or on the road. And a lot of them kind of reinvent their histories. It's interesting.
Right.
So they sort of piece together, you know, where they were, what might have happened, and some of them come up with these. I mean, he lived an outrageous life. Fortunately, he's clean now and hopefully sober again. He's been on and off. But live, still tremendous. I saw Ministry with Slayer at the last a tour they did, and it was incredible for both bands. But, yeah, so it was a combination of things, and I wanted to do it because I knew that Al is a really smart guy and an extremely funny guy and also very self-deprecating.
He's hilarious. So, I mean, there's times when I read that book, and I only just, again, recently finished it, where Emily, my wife, would be like, well, what's so funny? Because I would be laughing at the stories. I mean, it was really one of the and funniest books, or at least I got, it was almost like watching an episode of, you know, Larry David. I just start busting out laughing out loud. You know, it's like, it's funny. Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, that's what it was meant to be, because his stories are so insane, and he tells them in such a way that they're hysterical, but at the same time, so much of them are filled with tragedy and like, oh my God, how did you live through that type of, verbiage. So the way that came to be was really interesting. I'd interviewed him for Louder Than Hell, and I'd asked him about some of his crazy stories after we talked about the significance of industrial metal and Ministry's role in inventing it or pioneering it. And he's like, man, you know, I'm living in a suburb of Texas now, and, you know, my neighbors know who I am, and everyone appreciates me as a local rock star, and they don't know what I've done or my history or anything about all that. And so I don't want to tell you too much crazy stuff. I'm like, okay. He's like, but if you want to come to El Paso and hang out with me, you know, I could tell you stories that'll have you pissing yourself, but can't write about them. And I went, oh, man, what a great offer. But if I can't get a story out of it, and, you know, I'm ditching my family for a few days to fly to Texas on my dime, I don't know if I can accept. So sadly, I turned it down. And then I had another interview with him for a magazine in which he did tell some wild stories. He made the same offer, and I said, look, the minute you give me the go-ahead to write your official autobiography, I'm there. And he's like, yeah, you know what? Let's do it. And
right.
I was like, really? And, I don't regret it at all, although there were times that it was completely harrowing, and it was 2 weeks that I'm lucky I survived. But,
really?
It was, well, there was just a lot of drinking and a lot of smoking and some harrowing moments, but it was a lot of fun. And
it's a fun read too. Fun read.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
Good stuff.
So that's one of the books I'm, I don't know about most proud of, but my goal was to tell a tale that was completely outrageous and had stories that would be perhaps on par with something like Neil Strauss's The Dirt, Motley Crue book. And while it wasn't as kind of dirty, raunchy, I think it was, when it comes to drug anecdotes and just wild experiences. I think it paralleled that type of over the topness.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just all the stories. What's the guy, the old heroin addict guy? William Burroughs? Is that who?
Yeah.
That's a great story in there. And I don't want to spoil it for the Talking Metal listeners, but that is just outrageously great. Even like the little the Trent Reznor thing where they borrow his four track and trash it or something like that.
Yeah. And they're throwing firecrackers at him on the bus when he was their roadie and poor guy.
Yeah.
I think they've made nice over the years, but for a while there was a little bit of, I think, friction between them.
Right. He speaks highly of him in the book, though, from what I remember. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Anyways, Raising Hell, the brand new book by John Wiederhorn, Backstage Tales from the Lives of the Metal Legends of Metal Legends. And then, of course, we were just talking about the Lost Gospels, according to Al Jorgensen, another great read. And, of course, there's I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax. That's a real fun read, too, the Scott Ian story that you did with him. And, of course, Louder Than Hell, the Definitive Oral History of Metal. And what else? I'm missing some, right?
Yeah, the Agnostic Front singer, Roger Moret. I did a book with him, and that one's called My Riot.
Okay.
Agnostic Front, Grit, Guts, and Glory. And for those who don't know Agnostic Front, they were a pioneering band in the New York hardcore scene. So the frontman, Roger, was a major player in helping to put the New York punk scene together, not the punk scene, the hardcore scene, which came afterwards. And, you know, it was really composed of a lot of characters that were disenfranchised and had horrible home lives and really lived on the street. And they formed this community. Everything else, you know, everyone else shunned them. Their families generally didn't accept them. And they formed this community, and they lived in these squats all along the Lower East Side, which at the time, you know, in the Bowery and the Village, was really dilapidated and dangerous. And it was a kind of war zone with gangs and drugs. And these people were right in the middle of it, and they had these clubs that would be open all night, and they just would form bands and go in and perform. And what I thought was really interesting about that was when you talk to most rock guys, you know, the worst things that'll have happened to them will have been maybe I assaulted a photographer or maybe I was, you know, caught drunk driving and I did a night in jail and it was so horrible and, you know, I barely made it through the evening and boo-hoo. And, you know, yeah, I wouldn't want to have that happen to you. But when you compare it to someone like this guy from Agnostic Front, who to survive had to sell drugs and wound up getting busted with a large amount of cocaine in his car. He did a year and a half in jail. And as a Hispanic immigrant, there was a you know, Cuban, he was facing possible extradition or a lifetime sentence in a federal prison. So he got a good lawyer, and after a year and a half did get off because it was a clear case of entrapment. But he tells a story of being in prison, and it's very much, you know, what was that show that HBO had that Evan Seinfeld was in? Oz. And it's the real, you know, it's the real deal. He had to pick sides. Who to align himself with so he could survive gang fights. He had shanks that he had to hide in order to grab in the event that there was a major attack. He was told to throw acid in someone's face at one point, not the kind that, you know, trips you out for days, but the kind that
burns and scars you.
Burns flesh down to the bone. Yeah,
wow.
So it was, you know, fortunately he didn't have to do it, but in the end, but he really went through this harrowing ordeal and has also been a key figure in this music scene. So to me, it was just an amazing story, and that he's been able to survive all of that and is still in the band and making music and, you know, thriving. I always look for stories. If I'm going to do a book with someone, I want someone who has lived a life that's been filled with contrast and kind of triumph in the face of adversity. So many musicians have that story, but the ones in particular that I've worked with seem to be really good examples of that. And the triumph part of it, I think, really the redemption makes it not a Hollywood ending, but makes it less dark, I suppose. It gives you a light at the end of the tunnel.
Cool, cool. Well, again, John, thanks for joining us here on the Talking Metal podcast. I did want to ask you about something you told me the other day, and I can edit this out if it's top secret or something, but you said you were in the city a couple days ago with Kirk Hammett of Metallica fame. What was going on there? Anything you can share with us?
Yeah. Actually, it was all about Kirk and the Greeny guitar, the Peter Green legendary guitar that he bought a couple of years ago, and he recently played it at a Peter Green benefit.
I read
and
that.
This is for a cover story for Guitar World that should be out in about a month and a half. And Kirk's just great. He's thoughtful and interesting. It's not a Metallica article, but it does very much focus on him as a guitar player and as an artist, and discusses his inspirations and his influences and this one particular guitar and the history that it's had. It was originally owned by Peter Green, who, of course, was a founding member of the original Fleetwood Mac back when they were kind of a gritty, bluesy rock band, very dark, and certainly not the group that evolved later with... You can go your own way and all the big hits, the Rumors album. But it was a different era for the band. And Peter Green kind of went insane. He had a
very Sid Barrett-esque
story. A combination of mental illness and drug abuse. And it got to the point where, people wouldn't recognize him in public, or he would just do outrageous things or say crazy stuff, talk to himself, and really couldn't continue with the band, but was legendary in his own right. And he had this guitar, Greeny, that he played. It was a 55 Les Paul, 59, one of those classic amazing years. And it eventually ended up in the hands of Gary Moore. And Gary played it throughout his career, including on Thin Lizzy Records. And there's some great history about what happened while it was in the ownership of Gary Moore, who eventually sold it. And it ended up in Kirk Hammett's hands. And he tells the whole story of the guitar and how it really changed his playing. He views it as this very inspirational vehicle. He played a lot of solos in Hardwired to Self-Destruct using his guitar, and he says when he picks it up, it almost plays him, it speaks to him, and it not like talking to him Peter Green style, but
that's amazing. So the same guitar is on Fleetwood Mac records, was used on Thin Lizzy records, and also Metallica records, the same actual guitar, right? That's crazy. That's awesome.
It's pretty amazing. So we talked about the whole history of that, and then touched on his fascination with guitars and the horror-based guitars that he created, and his interest in horror and why and where that stemmed from. And it was good. It was a really good interview.
Cool.
It's funny when they tell you, "Yeah, sure, we'd love you to do a cover story on Kirk Hammett, but you can't talk about Metallica."
Right. Right. Yeah, I worked with Kirk once when for VH1. The Metallica guys, they won't go on podcasts apparently, or so I'm told. It's like they don't do podcasts. Somebody in their management told me. But anyways, when I was at VH1, I had the opportunity to work with him for some packages for VH1.com and some like behind the scenes stuff on That Metal Show. And he was like the nicest guy, but we got that same line. You can ask him anything you want, just not about Metallica, you know, so it was kind of funny.
Right. Yeah, no, he would bring it up from time to time, and then it was fair game, but I have no idea whether on the in the process of working on the next record or what's happening with James or just none of that, because it just wasn't, it wasn't germane to the story, and it was also off limits, and I have to respect that. So
right on. Cool. Well, John, as always, great talking with you. Stay safe out there, and folks, definitely pick up Raising Hell, Backstage Tales from the Lives of Metal Legends by John Wiederhorn. It's the perfect time, in my opinion, to dive into some reading, and this is definitely a book that we recommend here on the Talking Metal Podcast. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I think it's a book that's fun, and in these times of turmoil and you know, uncertainty, it's a love letter to metal fans, and it's really escapist. And my goal was to really just kind of make it a laugh out loud read that you could just pick up and read any chapter, because there's no sequence. It's just a bunch of stories and quotes.
Right on. Cool. Well, thanks again for your time, and I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and you stay safe too.
some classic Ministry here on Talking Metal off the Filth Pig record, the title track, Filth Pig. I love that record. I saw Ministry for the first time on that tour back in 1996 at Roseland. It was an awesome show. One of my favorites, actually, and I wish they put that one back in the set list, Ministry. We have tickets to see him this summer in Montclair, the same town John Wiederhorn lives in. I've seen him play Montclair, too, before, and they were excellent. So hoping that happens, hoping all our concerts come back to us full steam this summer. And on that note, again, I'm going to wrap it up. Let's remember to support John Wiederhorn, buy his new book, Raising Hell. What a better time than now. Than to read a book, right? I don't know if that makes any sense, but there's no better time than now, I guess is what I'm trying to say, than now to read a book. Especially if you don't have kids, you'd be able to really relax and enjoy yourself. I'm trying to educate my kids and feed my kids and everything else, so I'm more than stressed out, but as I mentioned, I'm not going to talk about that stuff anymore. So let's call it a day here on Talking Metal. Thanks, guys. Best of luck to all you guys. And again, we're going to keep it rocking here with the Talking Metal Podcast. I'll talk to you when I talk to you, hopefully sooner than later.